You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Engage with Andy Bush. In this segment, we get to stand at the intersection of politics and money with CNBC legend Larry Kudlow. Larry, welcome back to Engage.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you very much.
The markets this week saw a dramatic return of volatility with a slowing Chinese economy, Greek elections announced, the Fed normalizing language and policy, and the continued slide in oil prices, all listed as contributing to the declines in the markets. What market narrative do you see as the biggest problem for equities?
Well, I mean, you touched on the major factors. There's maybe one or two in Washington we could get to, but I just have to tell you, from my perspective, I regard the drop in oil prices as almost unambiguously good.
Positive.
For the U.S., for the U.S. economy, for the U.S. stock market, and also for most countries around the world, with the exception of some of our enemies like Russia and Iran. This is just a good thing, and maybe the market's a little worried about a shakeout. We're down today to close to $60 a barrel, and the market's sold off. But I think the goodness of this will show up as we get better consumer spending and better business investment and good profits, and the economy actually, if anything, seems to be picking up. So to me, the combination of rising profits and lower oil prices, and also a very strong King dollar, which is attracting capital from around the world. So I guess you got to get the bad worriers out and let them shake out. But to me, this is a good thing, not a bad thing. And I would say to people, for what it's worth, my advice, you can take it, it's free, but whatever. I would be buying these dips right now. Mm-hmm. That's my basic take.
You know, it's interesting because Janet Yellen, just a couple of weeks ago, warned the markets to expect more volatility. And what do you think she meant? I mean, is this what the prospect of what we have to look forward to going forward? Higher volatility is the norm, and really investors kind of need to adjust.
Well, perhaps so. I think that the Yellen stuff and the article about the Fed, on Monday, that's an interesting sleeper issue that may be on the mind, the collective mind of at least the American stock market, because the Fed meets next week, and they're not going to raise rates at their meeting next week, but they may, as you know, they may change the language.
Right, that's what Hilsenrath in the Wall Street Journal said.
Right, and I trust, Hilsenrath's a very good reporter, and I've heard this from other sources, so they may move from, rate hikes not for a considerable period to patience is the key word. They're going to be patient. We're being patient. So in a stronger economy, the Fed's going to want to try to normalize rates. And that may be concerning or worrying some investors. But let me say this. I think the Fed will go slow, and I think they should go slow. Okay, I'm in no rush because the market price signals are showing no inflation at all. Okay,
right.
If anything, disinflation right now. And therefore, I don't want the Fed to act quickly, and I don't think they will. I think that the futures market is right. It's pricing in a couple of rate hikes, maybe 50, 60 basis points by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a little low. Maybe they'll get to 75, but I don't think that's going to be a big event. Maybe worse than now, but I don't think it's going to be a gigantic event. But I agree with your point that may be a sleeper factor in this little mini correction we're having.
Yeah, as people adjust to the new information, right, that Hilsenrath brought forward, and it's pretty clear that this is what they're going to do because we're seeing it in different media sources. So we know that the Fed's floating this trial balloon. It's alerting the markets to this. This is also what Janet Yellen, I think what she said when she was concerned about volatility. But let me ask you this, and let's get back to this stronger U.S. dollar here, because I think this is really interesting. The BIS put out a report recently detailing the risk of a stronger U.S. dollar on emerging markets due to the U.S. dollar debt issuance by these emerging market countries. When does King dollar become a royal problem for these countries?
Oh, I, I think we're way a ways from that. I mean, I think the emerging market countries have to do what they have to do in terms of their own economies. All right, now, some of them have had an inflation problem. Some of them have not. But I don't think they can. I mean, we don't have a global peg to the dollar. Maybe we should at some point in the future. But we don't right now. I mean, look, until the last day or two, China has been a fabulous stock market. The Shanghai, that is mm-hmm. was up close to 40%. Now it's up about 35%. Japan has had a good stock market. Some of the smaller countries, I agree with you, have not had good stock markets, although I noticed that Europe, the general indexes in Europe are still pretty close to the highs. So I just don't, you know, it's a funny thing. You look at history, particularly the 80s and the 90s, a strong dollar with lower oil prices has been a recipe for prosperity and a recipe for a very good stock market, a very profitable stock market and a very profitable economy. So what we're getting now is a return to king dollar. It's been the case for the last 5 or 6 months. The Fed is going to gradually shift its policy. They're not going to be tight, but they're going to be somewhat less accommodative. Profits are still rising, and the economy is showing some better jobs numbers and so forth. This is good.
Right.
This is good. And lower oil prices. This is good. I mean, the price of oil, I have to remind people this. In the 80s, the price of oil got as low as $10 a barrel from 40. And in the 90s, the price of oil averaged, $25 a barrel. We had just about 4% real economic growth over that whole period.
Sure.
And we had a stock market that went up, 12 or 13-fold during that period. And why people are fretting about this, I don't know. Maybe it's just a change getting them out of their lethargy. I might add interest rates were much higher
no doubt.
In the 80s and 90s than they are today. We're going to have 1950s-style interest rates, Andy, if you ask me, for quite a while. The yield curve is positively sloped, meaning long rates are above short rates. That's a sign that there's no recession out there. The TIPS break-evens are telling you that inflation is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a decent chance, I'm going to just say decent chance, of a bill next year to lower corporate taxes. Not only for large companies, Andrew, but also for the smaller LLC pass-through.
Right, and I think this is a really key point. You know, I was talking to Grover Norquist earlier today, and you know, I asked him about the omnibus spending bill, and he said, "Look, this is fine because it keeps the sequester in place for another 10 years." He said the key things that he's looking for, and I guess he's just supporting what you're saying, is that tax reform bill or tax reform movement, which was started by Dave Camp but is going to be taken up by Paul Ryan and Orrin Hatch, that should really make people feel a lot better about what's going to happen in the United States, not necessarily in 15 and 16, but boy, if they get it right, it's going to be a huge positive for the U.S. economy.
Absolutely. And you've got, you know, two supply-siders, Paul Ryan and Orrin Hatch. And the way this thing's being crafted, as I said before, they're looking at lowering the C rate to 25%,
mm-hmm.
but they're also lowering the S rate, or the LLC pass-through rate, to 25%. And this is very positive. It's a big tax cut for small business. Now, I don't know if it'll get through. There are disagreements about how to repatriate the $2 trillion in cash that's overseas. There are disagreements, and Obama may not sign something, but he'll get a bill this year, by the middle of the year. So I'm just saying, corporate tax cut possibility. As you noted, spending, we basically cut spending from 24% of GDP to under 21% of GDP. Once the Obama stimulus, which I thought was worthless, wore off,
right,
and we've had a couple of sequesters now, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. The economy is getting better, not worse, as many Keynesians predicted. I think tax and spending policy is improving. You've got a Republican Congress that wants to knock back unnecessary regulations. I think that's a good thing for business and the economy.
Right.
So, to me, the political story is a lot brighter, and I'll just add that to the dollar and lower oil prices and all the rest of it.
Well, let's face it, the fact that they passed an omnibus spending bill that funds the government through, you know, September of next year is a great step forward, even in the lame duck session. I think that's what surprised me. I don't, you're a little tighter to some people in Washington, D.C. than I am, but I think that's what surprised me, because I felt that the Republican Congress coming in next year would do some positive things, but I'm a little bit surprised Harry Reid went along with everything that they put in that omnibus spending bill, because to your point, they go after regulations and they're trying to slow down everything from, you know, the sage grouse problem in the western states and having to make sure that everything's safe for that bird, to things like the push out on swaps for Dodd-Frank. So it's a great thing as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, leadership sources told me all along that they were going to avoid a budget crisis or a shutdown, that they were determined to avoid it.
Right.
And by and large, the Republican conference in the House would go along with that. Now, the Harry Reid story is more interesting. I have a theory, Andy, and that is that Harry Reid, now out of power for the rest of his days, really was pleading with Mitch McConnell, the incoming majority leader, to give him, Harry Reid, a decent office space when January 3rd comes and the Senate assembles. And so Reid is, unlike his usual self, he's gotten out of the way because
right.
he's really hoping. He'd like a nice suite of offices, even though he's irrelevant and completely out of power.
Wait, he doesn't want the janitor's closet in the basement?
I think somebody who's worked down there, office space is very important and is really a bargaining and negotiating point in a lot of important deals. You and the listeners probably think I'm kidding, but I'm actually not kidding. But look, the Democrats are in a state of shock right now.
Mm-hmm.
The rug's been pulled out from under them. They're at war as much with their own president as they are with the Republicans. You know, this mm-hmm. Chuck Schumer revolt, which probably wouldn't mean anything. But so I don't see them as a force, and I just didn't see them as blocking this, as you say, the omnibus spending bill. What do they call it? The cromnibus spending.
Cromnibus, yeah.
And, you know, now it may be a small piece, but the decision not to fund the Department of Homeland Security after February does give the GOP a hook to try to straighten out the immigration story.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a foolproof hook, but it's a warning. And some of the immigration activities are funded by fees, but some of them are not.
Mm-hmm.
And look, Homeland Security is a very important department anyway to protect us. So
right.
that I say on the whole that's a good thing. It's going to give the Republicans some leverage next year to try and straighten out the immigration story.
And I think that's a great point. All right, just real quickly in the minute or so that we have left, what are the three areas of politics in the markets are you going to be watching in 2015, the three things that really stand out to you?
Well, I'm really watching profits, Andy.
Okay.
The profits are the mother's milk of stocks and the lifeblood of the economy. That's point one. Point number two, if in fact the economy continues to strengthen, I'm going to be watching the various break-even tips to see if there's any inflation pressures at all. I don't see it, and I don't expect to see it. And number three, I'm going to keep a sharp eye out on tax policy in Washington, D.C. So profits, inflation, Fed, and tax policy is what I'm looking at.
Larry Kudlow from CNBC, thank you for coming on the show today.
All the best, happiest holidays.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.